We are back as a three-man podcast with an apology for last week's ill-advised chatter. Sorry. We discuss the latest on Eddie Howe, we praise Mohamed El-Younoussi's heroics, preview the upcoming derby at Ibrox, and chat about the son of a former Celtic favourite who isn't Jordan Larson. There's that and much more. Strap in, folks. Right, guys, we're back, and to be honest, I feel like I've got to start with a little bit of an apology for some of the antics that went on during last week's podcast. John, you weren't on the show. You've no doubt heard what happened. The two Ayrshire idiots here got a little bit carried away. I even finished the show by saying how, as opposed to my usual hail, hail. It's backfired a little bit, I must admit. I'm still relatively confident of Celtic bringing in Eddie Howe as our next manager, but I just need to get it out there. I got a bit ahead of myself. Even my dad was on at me for it. So we're going to play things cool. No rash statements in this podcast from me anyway, guys.
Yeah, it's a bit odd, isn't it? Like, the whole situation's a little bit odd. Everyone got a bit excited when that report came out and said that the deal was done in principle. And then the delay and the vacuum of knowledge just got filled with utter dross, in my opinion, which culminated in his agent coming out and saying something pretty nondescript that didn't really mean anything, that got everyone wound up further. I'm a bit sick of the whole situation, but I'm fairly relaxed about it. I did hear you and Paul get awful excited about it last week. But I think that's natural. I think that's the way a lot of people were feeling at that time. These podcasts are a capture in time, a capsule of time even, and you know, that's reflected by what happened last week. How are you feeling? How are you both feeling, Paul? How are you feeling about it this week?
I don't think my opinion or my excitement's really changed that much. I've not really been bogged down by the comments, as you said, pretty nondescript. And as soon as they came out, it was a case of, he's no coming. It's falling through. Celtic have done their usual and they've not moved or they've not offered enough money. I don't think you could read too much into it. I think it was always going to take time, and I think we even acknowledged that the chances of him coming in before the end of the season were slim. So how much does it actually change? I think maybe that comment just plays it down slightly, but I still think that we're in a good position. I don't think it'll be too long before it's confirmed. And if it does backfire, then it does backfire, but it seems that we're still in a good place.
I mean, I'll tell you what's annoying me. I think what's annoying me is people making out like Celtic are doing something wrong here. Like, there's something that Celtic should be doing more to bring Eddie Howe in. And these things take time for me. I don't think Celtic could really be doing anything more than they are at the moment. Celtic have not commented on it. I know there was a bit of chatter on Celtic TV about Eddie Howe yesterday, but I wouldn't read too much into that either way either. So I'm just a bit confused about some of the reporting around it kind of undermining Celtic's position on it all. Some of the punditry about it kind of criticising Celtic for some bizarre reason, and some of the more anxious fans also criticising Celtic. Where are you falling down on it, Hamish?
We, in our job, see a lot of the thoughts of Celtic fans, and I think a lot of the feeling towards Celtic, or that Celtic could be doing more, comes from the various reports that came out suggesting that Kennedy and even Strachan could be kept on under Howe's, you know, reign at the club. And I don't think that went down too well with a lot of supporters. And obviously the vast majority of supporters, including ourselves, don't know what's going on in negotiations. But there is a perception, I think, out there that Celtic are trying to foister Kennedy and Strachan onto the Howe regime. We don't know if that's true or not. Nobody knows. But when you see a hold up in negotiations, or a perceived hold up in negotiations, that feeling isn't helped at all.
I'm not particularly against Kennedy staying on. I know everyone's got a bee in their bonnet about him. I don't think he should be our manager. And I know he's had a role to play in some of the failures this season. But if a new manager's coming in and there's just this great transition seems to be the buzzword of all this over the last few weeks. Surely we want someone in there who knows these players and knows what they're all about and can communicate that to a new coach. You know, I'm not particularly fussed about Strachan, but I do think if Kennedy does want to stay, now I've also been on the record saying, you know, I think probably the best thing for Kennedy is for him to leave the club and become a manager in his own right eventually. But surely over the next 6 months, even if he, you know, say he stays for the next 6 to 12 months and does have an eye on moving away eventually, he doesn't need to move away this summer. You know, he could be there and be part of this transition and help Eddie Howe at Lennox Town and help him, you know, let Eddie Howe know which players will perhaps adjust better to his new methods and not. And I just don't get the hysteria about the Kennedy and Strachan thing. I know it's become a meme over the last 12 months. I know Strachan's laptop seems to be some point of hilarity. But beyond, you know, having a good laugh on Twitter, I'm not really sure I see the actual problem with them staying on.
It's the perception, though, isn't it? It's the perception of John Kennedy being kept on regime after regime. If he stays on under Eddie Howe, that will be four managerial regimes that he's been part of. In general, I don't think it's a bad idea to have someone who's got some sort of knowledge of Celtic and or Scottish football staying on, because I think we need that if Eddie Howe comes in. I know Marvin Bartley had been mentioned. I know Peter Grant had been mentioned. There's probably other people as well that have got history with Eddie Howe and a Scottish football knowledge. If Kennedy's the person who brings that Scottish football knowledge, I'm not massively against it. But if Strachan's been kept on at the club when if Howe comes in, I really don't understand that at all. And it's how it's perceived by the Celtic support for me, Paul. I think this has to be, in general, a clean break and a clean slate going into next season in a lot of regards. And I just think if Howe comes in alongside Kennedy and Strachan, bearing in mind that Stevie Woods will obviously still be there, even, you know, physios like Tim Williamson will still be there, I just don't see how that looks for the supporters. I don't think it reflects well.
Yeah, I think there is that perception. But as you mentioned there, Stevie Woods and Tim Williamson, guys like that, these folk transition freely, like from regime to regime, and they don't change. And maybe it's because that they're kind of further down the pecking order. But can you not put Kennedy and probably to a lesser extent Strachan alongside these guys that are kind of mainstays in the club and they know the game and they know the league, they know the players, and I think most importantly they know the opposition. And because regardless of what experience and how good Eddie Howe might be, it's going to be difficult for him coming from English Premier League or Championship to Scottish Premiership and looking at the players that he might not know, and obviously a lot of time and effort will be put into seeing what these players are like, what they're made of. But just that wee extra ease of burden from Kennedy or from another person in and around the Scottish game, knows the Scottish players, I think you must see that as a good thing to help the new manager, whoever it is. I was saying, still think it's going to be Eddie Howe, but you need somebody like that. I think without it, you're kind of coming in blind, and it could leave a wee bit of... I think you could end up like you could play a style of a football against, say, a Kilmarnock or a Hamilton away that might not work to the opposition, and you end up with frustrated fans regardless. So I think these people in and around the club have to be there. Like, you're not going to change the full setup of the... except like three or four different departments because the managerial hierarchy is changing. I think you have to have some sort of stability there in place, or you're starting from the ground up, and it could take 3, 4, 5 seasons before any real change comes to the fore.
It's going to sound like I'm coming after Stevie Woods here, right? And I'm not. I'm really not, because I want Stevie Woods to stay, and I think he's a great coach, and I think he's done amazing work at Celtic over the last however many years. But when we're thinking about the season and the failures of the season, the goalkeeping department's been one of the worst ones. You know, Stevie Woods was reported to have been a big part of signing Vasilis Barkas in the first place and scouting him from AEK Athens, etc. You know, so I sometimes feel the criticism grows arms and legs across the piece, and just because Stevie Woods doesn't have a few Twitter comedians roasting him every week with pictures underneath the Celtic Twitter account, he escapes the criticism that perhaps Gavin Strachan gets. And again, that's not me coming after Stevie Woods. I want Stevie Woods to stay. But at the same time, does anybody really know what Gavin Strachan has done wrong this season? And maybe these Twitter comedians need to just get over it a wee bit. You know, I'm all for a laugh. I've laughed at many of those images and posts before, but Celtic are operating at a level above that. It's, you know, it's not, sometimes I agree with the perception thing, but sometimes it's not about perception, it's about functionality. And clearly someone at Celtic thinks John Kennedy has done a good job over the years. I've never heard a bad word said about him by a player or a manager or a coach in any scenario. And I'm not wholly against it as long as we get the right manager in. I'd honestly believe that the Celtic support would probably get on board with it, even if Strachan and Kennedy stay on.
So you think if Howe comes in alongside Strachan and Kennedy with no other backroom staff coming in alongside that, the fans would in general accept that?
I think so, as long as it works, you know. It's going to come down to what happens next season. If we win the first six matches on the trot and go into the first derby of the year, you know, Celtic fans aren't going to be posting Gavin Strachan pictures on Twitter. It's just as simple as that.
Yeah, things change really quickly, don't they?
Yeah. And I just think we shouldn't... I do have an element of trust in the club. I know I sound like a changed man since I was last on the podcast, because I think my last appearance on here was the day after Lennon left. And I think it was raging a wee bit. But just taking stock of everything, as long as I'm really on the Howe train, I really want Eddie Howe in the club. And I really think just his presence alone will really lift standards and the way things are done at Lennox Town. And you know what? If he is happy with John Kennedy and Gavin Strachan staying on, then who am I to say otherwise? I mean, Howe is his own man. He's got lots of options. He's at a crossroad in his career. If he comes into Celtic, it's because he has genuine belief in the project and the staff and the players and the facilities we've got here. And that's good enough for me. I have to be honest with you. That's good enough for me.
Howe's not even set foot inside Celtic Park yet, and my heart's already been broken by the guy. I had him signed up to come to the club last week, and I'm feeling a bit of sadness around the fact that it's maybe not quite as much of a done deal, or it's not quite as clear cut as it seemed. Unless anyone else wants to butt in with any other Eddie Howe chat right now, you have 2 seconds, guys.
Yeah, me. So I want to talk about something. I want to talk about why it might be delayed. Why do you think it is delayed? What's your gut feeling?
I think genuinely that he wants his backroom staff, people that he knows in at the club. Now, whether that's Richard Hughes or whether it is Jason Tindall, who, by the way, he has worked in every single job with so far in his career and played with as a player, I think that is the holdup. I think Celtic are wanting to put John Kennedy and or Gavin Strachan onto him, and I don't know whether Eddie Howe's a fan of that.
I heard Eddie Howe and Jason Tindall had a falling out. I don't know how true that is. It's not been verified by me, but...
There was a Jason Tindall account on Instagram. I don't know if it was genuine or not. It only had a couple of hundred followers that posted an image of him and Eddie Howe with some sort of caption saying, we'll be back soon or something like that a couple of days ago.
My perception of it, the delay, is that until they kind of hand in over the rails of the kind of hierarchy with Dominic Mackay coming in, I think that is the hold up. I think nothing more.
Explain that to me.
So he's not in the role yet. He's officially left his role at the Scottish Rugby Union. And
16th, he leaves there. He starts us in the 19th.
So he was that a week or so that he's going to be confirmed in? There'll obviously be dialogue that's been ongoing beforehand, and there obviously something has happened to speed up his move into Celtic, because it was originally July he was supposed to be in that role. So if he's been moved up and he's coming in early, there's obviously something that he wants to do to be involved with the managerial process, and Peter Lawwell has accepted that, the club has accepted that, we've all moved forward. And I think just purely the optics of it would look like it's Peter Lawwell selecting the manager without the Dominic Mackay kind of influence. So now that he's coming in and he's on board with that, I think you'll see the final week in April. I think that's when things will be done and dusted.
I think there's an element of truth to that. I also think there will be obviously negotiations behind the scenes, but I don't think it has to be like a source of drama. I don't think it needs to be a thing where, you know, it's Celtic forcing something onto Howe and Howe forcing something onto Celtic. I think the delay is probably down to the hierarchy in terms of what's happening with the director of football situation. Now, the report is that Howe wants Richard Hughes and Mark Burchell in at some sort of roles in the club and the scouting and overseeing things kind of area, and that Celtic have been eyeing up Fergal Harkin of Man City. A lot of people have been framing it as it's a one or the other situation. There's a realistic scenario where Richard Hughes and Fergal Harkin both join the club. And so perhaps the delay is just about finding the lines of who has responsibility for what department and who has accountability to who and all of that. And I think that kind of thing would take time, especially if the Richard Hughes thing has come up perhaps quite late in proceedings. You know, there could be a thing where Fergal Harkin has control of the scouting department much in the way as Nick Hammond did. And Nick Hammond's job title was head of football operations, which isn't too far away, director of football. But maybe Fergal Harkin's just in there to oversee the recruitment thing. And then Richard Hughes has more of oversight over the whole football department in terms of appointing coaches and stuff like that. And is, you know, Eddie Howe's go-between Eddie Howe and the board. I think that's an interesting kind of thing. And I think that's what they're figuring out at the moment. I think that's what it's about. And I don't think it's particularly about demands that are being made on each side. It's just about who fits in where. And I'd be very surprised, though, if Eddie Howe doesn't come into the club. And I do agree with Paul. I think it makes sense for all of this to run together. And I'm pretty sure that whenever Eddie Howe is announced, season ticket sales will be on sale about an hour later.
People do slag off the Scottish Sun for obvious reasons, that newspaper's reputation over the years. But they and Alison McConnell, who I think's the Herald nowadays,
I think she's freelance. She contributes to the Herald, yeah.
Yeah, and numerous other outlets, STV, Sky Sports, maybe not quite Sky Sports as much as the other ones, but they were all saying that this was pretty much a done deal. They've not got that from nowhere. And quite interestingly, over the last week or so, they've been quite quiet and they've certainly not mm-hmm. retracted those comments mm-hmm. or even dialed back those comments, unlike me. They've kind of stayed strong and they clearly still believe that. But the worry that a lot of Celtic fans are feeling at the moment is that the silence is deafening. And when we had so many days of consistent, Howe's coming to the club, Howe wants to sign this player, Howe wants to sign that player, he wants Hughes in to join him, he wants Mark Burchell. Now we've not had anything for 4 or 5 days. The support are getting worried about all that. And to be honest, I'm close to joining them. You two are clearly going to calm me on this podcast, but I'm getting a wee bit concerned.
I'm going to try and round this off with a reminder of what happened when Brendan Rodgers came into the club. Now, he was linked with Celtic for a while, and then I think at one point Dermot Desmond was golfing and was asked about Brendan Rodgers, and basically said he was one of six people they were interviewing or something like that. Then it was reported by BBC Scotland, Chris McLaughlin at BBC Scotland, amongst other outlets, I believe, that Brendan Rodgers was the preferred candidate of Celtic. Much in the same way as they've reported on Eddie Howe. The wording is very similar in all the reports. Later that day, Celtic issued a statement basically denying they had a preferred candidate. They released a statement, a full-blown statement on the website, on Twitter, saying that they didn't have a preferred candidate, that they were going through a process. 2 days later, Brendan Rodgers was announced. So whatever is said publicly or not, or this silence, or whether it drags on, I don't think tells us much about anything. And I think everyone just needs to chill a little bit. That's the way I feel anyway.
Yeah, I'm not, as I said at the start of the podcast, I'm not overly concerned. I don't want to dial back or retract from last week. I think I'm pretty confident that Eddie Howe will be the next Celtic manager, and I think he'll be announced before the end of the month.
Okay, we can now move on from Eddie Howe and chat about a Celtic victory, and not just a Celtic victory, but a 6-goal Celtic victory. When was the last time you saw Celtic scoring 6 goals, guys? It seems a while.
I can't remember. Paul, do you have it on your top of your head?
Off the top of my head, no. I can remember obviously 5 at the start of the season, but 6, not this season anyway.
You two chat, maybe, I'll find out. You two chat.
Ross, I'm going to say Ross County last season when we beat them 6-0 is maybe the last time we scored 6 goals. I thought it was a pretty good performance. I'm probably going to sound like a moaning old git for the next 5 minutes, because the real frustration for me is that this performance, this kind of performance, comes in when the pressure is off. It was a completely meaningless game. It's probably the most meaningless, least high-profile Celtic game in history. When you factor in all the different things, the fact there was no fans at the game, it was a meaningless league game, we've got a caretaker manager in place, it was the game with the least riding on it probably in a good while for Celtic. But we scored 6 goals and there was a lot of good performances there, Paul. The main one that a lot of people are talking about is Mohamed El Younoussi. Scores another 2 goals yesterday, takes his tally to the season, or a tally for the season, to 17 goals. Now, Scott Sinclair, in his invincible season, that amazing campaign he had, netted 25. When you factor in that we could have another 8 games this season if we get to the Scottish Cup final, El Younoussi could beat Sinclair's total from the invincible season if he continues the form he's on, which is pretty remarkable to consider that he's not even played nearly as much as Sinclair did that season, and he's been part of a terrible side in comparison to that great invincible Celtic side. So just talk to me about El Younoussi.
Yeah, it's a very strange one. It was a point I was going to bring up in a wee while anyway about the players in and around this game yesterday who have a very uncertain or unclear future at the club. El Younoussi's obviously last season, I think, when he first came in, you thought, right, this guy is... And I remember we spoke about it in the podcast, the European pedigree and the kind of levels that he was at and surrounding the kind of Europa League was his level, but it was very good, just didn't cut the mustard in the English Premier League, but it was more to do with the style that he played. And I think he's fitted in remarkably well. He's scored goals in most of the, I think, competitions that he's played this season. Obviously, the League Cup, I think, I don't really know sure if he played in the League Cup, but in every other competition he's scored in, and he's scored goals from different areas. And I think, again, yesterday, that composure for the goal to chip it over McCrory, it's a brilliant finish. And I think he's kind of very, very quickly kind of gone off the kind of Celtic fans' radar, because I know a lot of people believe that he'll be here next season, but I think with the right price tag, he fits in well. And I think another loan just isn't viable. He'll be moving on, I think, next season to a new club. And me personally would not be against us signing him, spending a wee bit of money and getting him in, because he certainly knows how to do it in the Scottish game.
Mohamed El Younoussi actually scored in our last 6-0 win, and what if I told you it was this season? Would that ring any bells? Goal scorers Greg Taylor.
Oh, Reykjavik.
Reykjavik, yes. Goal scorers Greg Taylor, Chris Julian, Elton Edward, and Mohamed El Younoussi with a double. So
he likes a double, doesn't he?
He does like a double.
Have you ever seen a more bracier player? You think back, Lille, Reykjavik, that Ross County game. There was another few last season. I think he scored one at Hampden as well. He loves a double.
Are you bracing yourself for a Celtic bid, Hamish?
Right, how much should we pay? Because it's all well and good saying, you know, would you sign him? How far you want to go? How far you want? Would you pay 10 million for El Younoussi? Is that over the top?
That's a little bit over the top. I'd pay a Julian fee, like 5-6 million.
I think Julian was 7.
7, yeah. I'd pay someone around there. Like, I don't think we should, you know, spend half our budget. It depends what our budget is next year too, and it depends how much we get for Edouard and Aya, for example. You know, if we get good fees for them, you know, our budget could end up something like 30 million. If we get substandard fees for them, our total budget could be something like 20. And so you're not wanting to spend 10 million, half your budget on one player, especially. And I love El Younoussi, and I do think we should buy him if he's available, but there is consistency issues there. And so you would be a little bit hesitant about paying £10 million on perhaps a player like that.
And he's also 27 in a few months, so you're not really going to get that sell on.
5-6 million is really a good kind of fee for him, I think, and I would definitely bite on that kind of number. What about you?
Well, I to be honest, I kind of felt that I would go upwards of almost 10 million, but then again, I'm not in charge of finances at Celtic. After seeing that he is 27 in a few months, I'm not sure Celtic will go that much, because they're quite plainly isn't that sell-on value? If he played two seasons for us after signing permanently, he'd be, what, 29 by the time we were trying to shift him. I suppose you could still maybe recoup that fee if he had a couple of good seasons, maybe even get more money. But I think he's a player who, if he came into the club permanently, there would be very little risk with him other than injury. He knows the club. He knows a lot of his teammates, or certainly a lot of the players that are currently there. He knows the league. And to be honest, we kind of know that he can do it both domestically and in Europe. There's still issues for me over consistency. That's going to sound daft when I said the thing about the comparison to Scott Sinclair there. And he has scored 17 goals this season, but a lot of his goals do come in the same games, and he does go through runs of scoring maybe 5 or 6 goals in 5 or 6 games, and then goes about the same number and doesn't net at all. So there's worries for me there. And also, his big game performances, other than Leo, can you remember another big, big game that El Yunusi really stood up and delivered for us?
I think you had a good semi-final last season.
Against Hibs, yeah.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying there. I do think he is that. I do think he could be a big game player for us, though. I think, you know, it comes down to, if I'm thinking of a team, a squad that I want to build to challenge Rangers next year and to compete at some sort of decent level in Europe, and I'm looking at the players who are at Celtic right now, El Yunusi is definitely on that list for me. He's definitely on that list, and I really think Celtic should. And I think, you know, there's signs that we will make a bid for him, or at least try to get him in on a permanent basis. Whether we pull it off or not, I don't know. But, you know, John Kennedy's still speaking really highly of him. And El Yunusi seems happy too. You know, he's quite often put in front of the press and the media, more than certainly other loanees that have been at the club in the past. And he always speaks fondly of his time here, and he always looks like he's enjoying himself, I feel like. It's a no-brainer for me if he's available.
Paul, do you think it is a given that El Yunusi would want to come back to Celtic, given how horrific this season has been? I take what John says on board, but do you not think he would possibly want, just think, nah, stuff that?
Nah, I think he's kind of tasted the good times, and he kind of strikes me as a player that wants to win trophies, and he knows that at Celtic he has that real opportunity. Obviously, he was involved in the Scottish Cup final last season, played this season, and I think he would want to prove himself for national team as well. Like, he wants to be playing at a high profile, high level. And I think there will be other clubs with similar budgets that will be sniffing around. And it's not to say that he maybe won't go back towards the kind of the eastern side of Europe and get in at a kind of higher profile club there. But I think he has a real opportunity to put himself in the window for, obviously, national team selection and winning trophies. I can't see anything. One season, I don't think, would define him or any of the players in and around this squad. I don't think, like John Joe Kenny, for example, if he's played a dozen games or so, I don't think the fact that he's came up here and pretty much straight away that Rangers have won the league, that would put him off coming back for another season or signing on. I think these guys will look at it as a chance to kind of really show what they're made of and win trophies. That's, as a football player, you wouldn't be in the game and you wouldn't be wanting to play at the highest level if you didn't want to be involved in a battle, a fight, or a chance to win silverware.
The only thing is, Paul's just reminded me there, you know, in terms of his international things, Stanley Solbakken seems to absolutely hate Scottish football. So there is an element of that.
It was a Copenhagen manager, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, yeah. And he's now the Norway manager, and he was kind of very dismissive of Scottish football when talking about Christopher Ayer, saying that for Ayer it's like playing against junior players or something mad. Kennedy was hopping mad about it as well, kind of coming back at him. So there's perhaps an element of that. I think Ayer's pretty much been told by the Norway national team to move on as soon as possible. So you never know.
I think he started certainly two of Norway's recent three games. Mm. I think he came on at half time in the other one, which was a 3-0 win away at Gibraltar. So he certainly still seems to be playing for Norway. El Yunusi got a double yesterday. Another guy who scored was James Forrest. I know you wanted to talk about him, John.
Yeah, I just think it's really important. I know he kind of hobbled off injured, but the latest from John Kennedy is that was a kind of muscle stiffness around his back and hip and hamstring areas, and more of taking him off as a precaution rather than a reoccurrence of his ankle injury, which is the one that's kept him out for 6 months. So that's kind of positive news. Like, it's obviously not great that his body broke down during the game, but if it's just the precaution, they can hopefully manage him through the week and unleash him against Rangers, because I really do think it's really important that both Forrest and El Yunisi play in that game, because I think that the key to unlocking Rangers will be moving, you know, through those inside channels, kind of overloading their centre-backs almost, giving their full-backs something to think about, with some direct running and trickery, and Forrest and El Yunisi are both crucial to that. I think that's mainly the reason why there was such a difference in the performance yesterday, is that we were committing people to run past the defensive line. And I know we were playing Livingston and Rangers are a different kettle of fish, but in terms of exploiting a defence and trying to unlock opportunities, I think that that's going to be so key next week. And it's really heartening to me that Forrest was kind of looking immediately back on top form. I know he had a couple of substitute appearances that were quiet, but he's still finding his fitness. But the two games that he started, I think are, you know, it's a positive that he's available. And I really hope that he's fit. I really think him and El Yunisi could be the key to beating Rangers next week.
The team kind of picks itself for me next week, which is something we've not really been able to say for any derby match this season. Going into all the recent games, it's always been whether you start two up front, whether Griffiths will come in. The first game, there was basically every position in the entire team was open to some sort of debate. Kind of feel, just thinking off the top of my head now, going through the team, Bain... forgotten his name. Right,
I think the team yesterday.
Good start. You need to edit that out.
Bain. I know what you're saying. It's Bain, Kenny, Welsh, Iyer. I would play Greg Taylor instead of Laxalt. Yeah. Brown, McGregor, Forrest, Turnbull, El Yunisi, Edward.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's a 4-2-3-1. But the worry that some people have is that, you know, we kind of moved away from that 4-2-3-1 to a central diamond to try and specifically combat Rangers, and that opening up that midfield again at Ibrox could lead to disaster. But for me, it's always been about play the best players in their best positions, and those players all play at their best in those positions. And I do think that front four of Forrest, Turnbull, El Yunisi and Edouard can beat Rangers.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the really important thing with this is that the last game against Rangers was a free hit for us, and it was a free hit for them. There was no real, the only pressure was for them was to remain unbeaten. The fact that we now have the chance to knock them out and nullify their chances of winning the Scottish Cup is a massive incentive for these players. They know that they've underperformed in the league. They know that they underperformed massively in the League Cup, and they have one last chance of retaining silverware and making a bit of history. If we become the first team to win the Scottish Cup 5 times in a row, you know, there's a real chance. And to put Rangers out, that I'm sure John mentioned it on WhatsApp a couple of days ago or last week, that this, if we put them out the Scottish Cup and go on to win it, that's one of the things that would be remembered from this season. Not that the fact that they won the league title, it's the fact that after that, and they're riding on a high of 90 plus points and not losing in the league and all that kind of stuff. If we can turn them over at Ibrox, it's a huge talking point.
That's part of my campaign to pretend that this season never happened. There's genuinely a part of me that thinks that with no crowds at the football this season, you know, you think back to when we stopped at 10, that was such a memorable season. I know you guys are a little bit younger, but it was such a memorable season. Everyone remembers almost every kick of the ball so vividly. And I just don't think there's going to be the same memories for them or for us about this year. And I don't think it's going to be the haunting horror show that some have predicted about how we lost the 10. And I do think winning the Scottish Cup could play a major part in that. They won it so early, right? And they did win it, and they won it fairly. I know some people have tried to write that, row that back a bit and say there's some kind of COVID cheats, etc. For me, they won it fairly, and they won it well, and fair play to them in that sense. But I'm over it already, and I do think winning the Scottish Cup will make it a distant memory, especially going into next season in the summer. So, Paul's like, I have been drumming up that in WhatsApp groups and the chat, although like, I do think a lot of people aren't going to remember the season in the same way that it was hyped up to be initially.
Well, good on you for starting that campaign, and I'm sure you'll get lots of backing from the wonderful listeners of the Grand Old Podcast. I'm with you on it. I'm over this season already. A few months ago, the prospect of Rangers going unbeaten this season was one that really troubled me. I don't know if I even care anymore. As long as we get a result and win next week at Ibrox, I'll be more than happy for them to win the last derby match. I don't know how people feel about that. I don't know if I'm just trying to protect myself here to get hurt because I've been hurt so often this season, but I'm not hugely up for next week's game. I dare say that'll change by, well, we don't know when the game's going to be played. It'll change probably by Friday afternoon, I would say. And maybe it's just me protecting myself from getting hurt again, but I just want this season over no matter what happens. I've just absolutely hated every minute of this season.
Next week's huge for me. I mean, even going into the New Year's derby, I already had in my head conceded the league, regardless of what was going to happen at Ibrox, you know, for that one. But this one obviously has meaning because it's a knockout cup game.
Do you not think we'll just be disappointed again?
No,
this Celtic team will just let us down again like they have all season.
I think we can win next week. I know. I know. I honestly think we can win next week. I do think we've got players who can beat their players, and it's about how we apply ourselves on the day. And I think we were better than them last time at Ibrox, and Nir Beaton got sent off and we lost the game. I thought we were better than them in the last game that we drew. I think we can go there and win. I really do.
It'd be really sweet, wouldn't it, Paul? It'd be really sweet to go there and win. It wouldn't solve any of the ills of this season. It really wouldn't. But for at least one afternoon, one evening, it would give us a bit of the bragging rights back.
Yeah, I think so. And I don't think it's remiss to say that it's probably the biggest game for 6 months that we've faced. Like, it's been difficult as a Celtic fan being 20-plus points behind, trying to gee yourself up and get ready for another game against Hamilton or fucking Ross County. It's been hard. It's been hard this season, and I think a lot of people recognise that without the fans and just the fact that we were just kind of tumbling on, we were winning these games, we weren't performing, and Neil Lennon was still managing to hold on to this position through defeat after defeat after draw after drop points. It was so infuriating. Now we have this one chance. This is the last shot we've got. It's the final roll of the dice, and it's the only way that the season can be saved. And I think I'm with John. I think we've got a chance. I think we
it was a shock.
We've been to
for
Ibrox
those
a few
who aren't
times.
Aware, Hamish literally just rolled his eyes there.
But I think the team that John said, the team that played yesterday, that's the starting 11. There's been goals from 4 or 5 of these players. Like, it's not, we've not been over reliant on Edward, we've not been reliant on anyone in particular, and I think they might go into this game with a lot of pressure riding on it. They will be desperate to win the double, and they'll be desperate to put us out the cup. And seeing the fact that it's at Ibrox, it's so early on in the competition, I don't know for me if that is slight ease of pressure for Celtic. When was the last time we played them in the last 16?
Maybe the Bruni game, I think.
It's the fact that it's been a long time since it hasn't been a semi-final or a final that we've played them in, because they've not been around the top league. So I think there's a real chance that we go there, we turn them over, and then the ball starts rolling on new manager, new director of football, and everything gets positive going into next season.
I think it's Don McKay coming in the door 2 days after the game. So win or lose, I think Celtic will be, you know, win or lose, I think Celtic will be looking to spring the narrative of a fresh start, and I think that will help whatever happens to. I'm totally up for the game.
Do you think the game will get moved?
I think it probably will, yeah.
You're a royal expert, Paul.
The royal correspondent.
Defomania this weekend for Paul.
Yeah, that'll be the cup derby away to following weekend or something like that. I think there's a chance that it will get moved, and I think it's probably focal, just it's just one of these things. past caring about it. Like, why should we be upset about it? Just accept it and move on. Don't really have to shout about it. If it gets moved, it gets moved. It doesn't really affect anything in the grand scheme of things, does it?
I think if it gets moved, I think it's still going to be played on the weekend at some point, so I don't think it's too much of a big deal. There's been chat about it might be Sunday lunchtime or something like that, so I'm not too fussed about that. The team will prepare for it the same way regardless, I would suggest.
I admire your optimism, lads. I genuinely do. And don't get me wrong, a couple of hours before the game starts, I'll be on that bus with you two. But right now, I've had my heart broken too often this season with Celtic, continually in big games, even big games that were getting the better of the opposition. We make daft mistakes, and I have seen nothing yet from this Celtic team to suggest that they will learn from that this time. I would absolutely love to be wrong, and I would love to turn Rangers over. It wouldn't guarantee us winning the Scottish Cup, because given how this season's gone, we'd still have three big games to win after that, but it would give us some real bragging rights. I just think that sadly Rangers are a far more efficient team than us, and they seem to get every single break, and as frustrating as that is, that's the way things go.
Yeah. I mean, there's an element of reality that Rangers have been the better and more consistent team than us this season, and there's no real getting around that. You know, what worries me is that they've been really good in the Europa League for the most part, and this is more like a Europa League game for them than anything. You know, they play week to week. So we'll wait and see. I do think we've got the players to beat them, though. So, you know, I'm not maybe not predicting a win, but I certainly have hope. But I do think it's a 50-50 thing. I'm 50-50 on it, and that's good enough for me at this moment.
Right, if we get anything else, I've got one wee thing I want to add, but either of you got anything you want to bring to the table?
Well, we've been thinking about doing little grab bags of Celtic chat or different stuff. I thought we'd take a look to the continent, and there are a lot of people talking about Jordan Larson this year. In the sense of he's playing well with Spartak Moscow. I think he gave an interview where he said he's open to the possibility of moving to Celtic in the future. But there's also reality that he might even be beyond us at the moment. I mean, as I say, he's doing well in Russia, and he's been linked with a move to Borussia Dortmund. He's 23. You know, a move to Celtic might not be the best thing for him in terms of his career, taking the romance out of it. So why not look at the son of another icon? And another one is catching my eye.
Paul Telfer.
No, Mr. Sidney Van Hooydonk. Now, he's 21. He plays in the Dutch second tier. He plays for NEC Breda, which is the team that was signed Pierre from in the 90s. And he scored 13 goals in 21 games this year. Scored a fantastic free kick on Friday night. And he's out of contract in the summer. So I'm saying, why not get him in, provide a bit of squad depth? You know, it's not just Edward who's probably leaving this summer. You know, Lee Griffiths is away. There's chat about Patrick Ma moving to New York Red Bulls. Why not get in a young 21-year-old with a bit of Celtic pedigree in him, big lad, scores a belting free kick, scoring a few goals, a late bloomer like his dad. Get him signed, in my opinion. Does that sound good to you?
Well, the obvious question I've got to ask you, if you take away his surname, are you still wanting to sign him?
Maybe. I mean, if we're looking around the leagues, you know, and thinking about signing a breakthrough talent, then sometimes the second tier of some of these countries is the way to go. Now, the Dutch second tier does have an under-23 teams in it, so there's that element to it. So it's not as if he's doing it in the English Championship, for example. But I just thought it was a nice wee reminder that there's some sons of the icons that we've celebrated coming to the fore right now. And actually, for as long as I can remember, over a decade, people have been talking about Jordan Larson, even when he was a very young teenager. So it's nice to see him establish himself at a big club like Spartak Moscow. And I'm genuinely interested in seeing where his career goes next. And I don't know, there's something about the romance and nostalgia there for me that makes me a fan of something like that.
So we've got Jordan Larson, we've got Pierre's boy, we had Brendan Rodgers' boy. Remember, he played the pre-season game. We get any other ones, Paul, that you want Celtic to sign?
Not off the top of my head, no. The one point I was going to make, just to finish things off, was that the interesting thing looking at the game from the weekend was that we have pretty much half and half in terms of players who will be here next season, guaranteed, and players who probably won't be. And the interesting thing for me is that three out of the six that I've picked out, three out of that six makes up the kind of base of the midfield, which is a positive thing. If you build around James Forrest, David Turnbull, and Callum McGregor, then you have a real kind of recipe for success. The other three that are all probably still going to be, Scott Bain will still be at Celtic, Welsh will still be here, and most likely Greg Taylor. The other guys who started, Scott Brown is obviously, he's signed for Aberdeen. El Yunusi is question mark. Edward will go. Ayer will probably go. And John Joe Kenny, is he going to come back to the club? It's another one that you would doubt. So the fact that we've got kind of three mainstays in the midfield is a positive thing for me. You've got one other guy that came off the bench and is Mela Soro that is possibly could fit into that mould as well. So from whoever the new manager is and when Eddie Howe does come in to continue that trend, I think that you have a real strong starting point from that to build your squad around.
Optimistic.
Right, I've got a wee update on the Champions League teams that we could face. I'm going to make this a weekly feature because it obviously changes every single time a match is played at the top of these various leagues. For anyone who doesn't know, we actually secured second place yesterday with our win against Livingston. I know that's not the sentence we wanted to hear at the start of the season, but it is a fact. So we've booked our place in the Champions League second qualifying round, which is actually the first round we go in at. We are one of six teams in that round. We're the only confirmed team so far, and I think any other team is a long way off from being confirmed because every other league that is relevant to this discussion is very tight at the top. But as things stand at the moment, or as things stood as of 5 p.m. on Sunday evening, the six teams in this first qualifying round that we go into are Celtic, PSV Eindhoven, Fenerbahce, Rapid Vienna, Brøndby and Sparta Prague. Now, we would be the top seeds based on our UEFA coefficient. So our potential three opponents, Sparta Prague, Rapid Vienna or Brøndby. How do we feel about that for the first round, guys? We've got history with a couple of those teams.
That's just the first round.
Yeah.
I don't feel great about that.
Sparta Prague give me the fear a little bit, I must admit.
And so what is that? Is that, well, obviously, they hammered us this year. So what is that? Is it played in early July, is it?
Late July, I believe. Late I think July. It's the 24th or something like that. It's back to two legs, obviously, in the summer.
But these are the good thing about these games are, obviously, the opposition is a lot stronger than we would used to be playing, but the win over two legs against either three sides guarantees you the Europa League group stages, doesn't it? So that's the one thing. I think you go into that game thinking, right, you want to make sure you've got football in Europe up until Christmas, you go out and win this two-legged game and then we'll see where we go from there.
It's a decent shout, Paul.
And the Europa League's more exclusive. Next year it's 32 teams rather than 48. Basically, the bottom 16 teams are going to go into the Europa Conference League from next season, so the Europa League is going to be much stronger, which, when you consider Celtic took 2 points from six games this season, is probably not a great idea.
But Hamish, just double-checking. So, you know, we'll win that game and go into the guaranteed Europa League regardless of what happens in the rest of the Champions League qualifying. So if we lose it, we drop into Europa League qualifying, and then if we lose that, we go into the Europa League too?
Yes. So we could theoretically play all three tournament qualifiers.
Well, I know you might not know this off the top of your head, but what happens if we go into the Europa League groups and finish third? Do we go into the knockouts of the Europa League too?
Yes, if you finish third in your Europa League group, you go into the knockouts of the Conference League. You play off against teams who finish second in the Conference League groups to get to the last 16.
Right. So I know people are probably slagging that format of the three competitions, but I actually quite like having the kind of parachute into a lesser European competition. I know it wouldn't be great perception-wise if we dropped into Europa League 2, but we'd probably still get a decent tie. And I'd just enjoy
a chance of winning that, by the way.
Yeah, a chance of winning that. And I, you know, there's just it's much better than just going right out of the Europa League or right out of the Champions League. I'm actually a bit of a fan of that. And when I was growing up, there was always three European competitions and I always, you know, enjoyed all three of them. All three of them were quite different, so I'm up for it.
So the Europa, the Conference League, going to be 16 teams in? Is that right?
They're all 32.
Right, okay. So there'll be extra teams qualifying for Europe as well, which...
Mm-hmm. There's 16 new teams, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's good exposure for lesser teams as well.
I think the idea for the Conference League is to give lesser nations a chance to get group stage football. So you'll probably have teams from countries like Israel, Slovakia, countries that are a bit lower than Scotland in the pecking order will get group stage football. But I think John's right. I mean, finishing third in a Europa League group probably wouldn't be considered a good result. But if it's a case of dropping into the Europa Conference League and probably having a outside chance of actually getting to the real latter stages, I mean, who wouldn't? It may be the Conference League, but imagine Celtic ended up winning a European trophy. And like, it'd
I'm
be
sure
amazing.
There'll be a couple of good teams kicking about in these, and even in the third competition, I doubt it'll be a group of no hopers. But I think it's good, and it, you know, for teams like Aberdeen and Hibs, you know, Radio Scotland get excited about an Aberdeen qualifier in the Faroe Islands. So God knows what it'd be like if they actually made the groups of that Europa League too. Be like a big major event.
Yeah.
So good for them too.
Anything else happening, guys?
No, that's me.
No. Actually, yes, one thing. I've signed up for a marathon. That's about as exciting as things
get. I think that's the end of the podcast. Thanks very much, everyone, for tuning into this episode. John, Paul, thanks very much. I've got one last thing, actually. If you are a fan of this podcast and have enjoyed this episode, we really would appreciate if you would leave a kind review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast.
That's a bit optimistic.
Yeah, or just a review. It helps us get noticed a wee bit more. It would be really appreciated if you're at a loose end and you want to waste a few minutes writing a nice wee review. It would really be appreciated. You can get us on Twitter, @GrandOldPod. You can get us all in our various places as well. We're going to try and get the podcast back every week from now on. There'll be no shortage of things to talk about. We'll be back next weekend, hopefully chatting about a Celtic victory at Ibrox. Take care, everyone, and hail, hail.